that says, these tales are going to be in a book someday, and I've finally given up, just collected a whole bunch of my web pages from three or four of my websites, put them on a floppy here. It's in HTML, so you just go start, run, A colon, and then click on index.html, how original of me, and up comes the book. So anybody wants to buy a book from me for $10 later on, please catch me if you have to sell them one. And other announcements for the convention, we tried to get RMS up for this panel, Richard M. Stallman. He is in town this weekend. He will be in the third track downstairs from 11 to 1 p.m. tomorrow talking about GNU because he needs that long to explain it properly. So we have graciously acceded to his request and have marked out that much time. Everyone else, you'll notice if you look at the sheet out there, it's in half-hour blocks. But RMS, we're going to give him his 2 hours or whatever he wants. He's deserved it. So, hope some of you will be interested enough in GNU to get down there and see him. What other tales of woe and intrigue can we extol them with now, John?
I wanted to explain a rather powerful hacking technique that was shown to me through parties unknown. Obviously, I can't tell you who did this. But at one point in time, about a month ago, at a certain specific time, for maybe 30 seconds, one would go up and type www.microsoft.com and it would bring up redhat.com. And 30 seconds later, it would bring back microsoft.com again. That's cool. Got to be one of the biggest hacks or best hacks I've seen. Don't ask me how he did it. It had to do with DNS somehow. Anyway, at this point, let's see. I could be talking a little bit about some more blue box techniques that we did, or I could open it up for questions.
Do we have any questions? We have a microphone here if you have questions.
Yeah.
So that since this is being recorded for posterity.
Chance to ask me any questions.
For posterity or the internet. Yes, you, give your email address.
Crunch@webcrunchers.com, webcrunchers.com. I'll tell you about webcrunchers.com. Webcrunchers.com is an iMac, an old default iMac, sitting up on top of a rack panel in Steve Wozniak's house, tied to his T1. And that's been up online now for about 4 years, actually since about the first, when I was here at the Hope last time. It was about the time that I had WebCrunchers up and running. I actually had it running about 4 months by that time.
So WebCrunchers.com is your website.
Well, WebCrunchers.com is one of four servers that I've got right now up online. And WebCrunchers.com has about 11 hosted domains up there right now, some very large Indian companies, and an African company, and a couple of companies in the States. And they've been happily having their website hosted up there. And it's running WebSTAR 3.02, and it's a pretty secure system. And as we all know, Macintoshes are pretty hard to break into. I don't know that there is any exploits that I know of that can break into Macintoshes. But there was one instance where a Macintosh was used in the new OS 9 where it was possible, due to an error or a bug in the open transport, that you could actually use a Macintosh to do denial of service attacks. By programming it to do ping attacks on other systems by some kind of trick. I don't know how that works or anything like that, but Apple, of course, came out with a fix very shortly, so if you don't have this fix, I'm sure by now all the new OS 9s that are out there now have been actually fixed, so you can't do that anymore. I had another server that's hosted on my DSL, trans-actions.com, and it pretty much is a small commercial website. It's using FreeBSD on that one, and our main shopip.com are using OpenBSD on that one, and then we have another one called shellconf.com or shellconf.org, and that one's using Red Hat 6.1 systems. We've got three different kinds of Unix systems, which is kind of nice because we can test a lot of our software on each of the three kind of main things. We're going to have a Solaris up soon in a couple of weeks as well, so we'll have at least a complete menu of Unix environments to play with, which is kind of nice. And our OpenBSD right now, we're using PostgreSQL for the database, and we're using Python for most of our CGI work, and it's a very nice language to use. If you haven't really played with it, it's quite indentation sensitive. I think you Python people know that already, but if you haven't really worked with Python, indentation means everything. You've got to write pretty code on it. You can't do these strange, write unreadable code. The nice thing about Python is it's very readable, much, much better than Perl, I think, as far as readability goes.
Cool. My website currently is at spacyideas.com. That's S-P-A-C-E-Y, ideas.com/Cheshire. That's my homepage. My email, of course, is Cheshire, C-H-E-S-H-I-R-E, at 2600.com. Manuel's very gracious of letting me have that as an address to forward to me. Although, actually, I have an account on false. I don't use it much. But it's very nice to have an account there. You can go to that, thespaceideas.com/Cheshire. It has a link to the AT&T Racing Fan Club, and you can catch that from there. I also have various random links to all sorts of things, the two-letter and three-letter codes, which are used for domain names and things like that. There's a lot of stuff about my area code. You can get links to the NANPO, the North American Numbering Plan Administration, which is the people that issue area codes. It was their website I went to and found that the number was available. Lots of J-random stuff on the webpage.
Am I still hosting your soccer website on WebCrunchers?
Actually, no. Well, I've still got webcrunchers.com/World Cup. But
that's what I mean, yeah, World Cup.
Right now it's hosting a mirror of the AT&T Racing site.
Cool.
Yeah.
My personal website is webcrunchers.com/crunch. And on that website, you'll learn everything there is to know. It's kind of my personal website. I talk about everything from raving and hacking. I got my hacking stories up there. I've got links to other hacker sites, although I haven't really updated it very recently. But I expect to be going through the site really soon and cleaning up all the links and things like that. So if you have a hacking site out there that you think is worthy of being linked from WebCrunchers, by all means, contact me. Email me at crunch@webcrunchers.com. And do that. One thing about people that email me, you know, please, you guys, when you email me, like, how do I hack? I will always come back and I'll say, my rates are $75 an hour, 2 hours minimum, and I'll tell you all you want to know about hacking. So, and boy, I'll tell you, that sets them up pretty quick.
John let me have the World Cup directory on WebCrunchers, and what that's about is I am a bit of a soccer fan because it's the game the rest of the world loves that America is finally getting into, and where we can join the rest of the world in something without cramming our stuff down their throats, like football and basketball and what have you. I was stationed in Germany when I was in the Army. Actually went to a soccer match, realized that it was the game the rest of the world loved. When they were floating around the Orlando area looking for volunteers for this World Cup thing in 94, I go, what American in his right mind is going to... I'm not married mine. Hello. And so I was a volunteer at the Orlando venue of the World Cup, and we had a great time. I mean, let me tell you, the Dutch really know how to drink, let me tell you. Other questions on the floor? Okay. And I've pretty much covered this stuff. I need to cover. We got 20 minutes to go.
You're asking me?
If we had 60 seconds with the next president of the United States, what would we tell him? Thank you for your invention, Mr. Gore. We love the Internet. If he was talking to me as a hacker, I would say, we are not your enemy.
No, I know that.
Okay, then if you're asking me about my politics as a hacker, then I will go back to my conversation about soccer.
One change you can make, policy, law, and any culture, perception.
The question, I think, is if we could change anything in policy or culture or anything from the, you know, as directed from the government to the people, what would we suggest? I haven't given that enough thought, and that deserves much more thought than just an off-the-top-of-the-head flip reply. He'll ask again at 10 o'clock tonight. Okay. I got all day to think about that and worry that through. Okay. But, yeah, that's the kind of thing I'll start to think about now for the next time I'm asked. But, no, that's much too important a question. I'm sorry. Thank you. Sal, you have something?
Yeah, I realize this is set up for midgets. So, my question is, you know, people used to be, not me, of course.
But, of course.
Yeah, people used to be able to send tones down phone line with the Radio Shack box by changing the chip in it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The chingers.
Right. You weren't able to do it with the customer-owned phones. You only used to be able to do it with real AT&T phones.
What's sure, that? Because they bought cheaper technology. Remember that when AT&T developed the tone system and what have you, it was back in the days of a gold-plated network when they could not only justify spending money on whatever they could, well, they could spend money on whatever they could justify, they were then forced by the FCC tariffs to make back that money plus a rate of return. Okay, in the era of competition, you can't spend that kind of money because you've got a bottom line to worry about.
Yeah, and it still works in a lot of phones, I'm told, amazingly enough. Now, here's something else about this thing. You can get these little greeting cards that record your voice, right? And they're like very, very tiny and very, very small. And what you do is just record the quarter tones on the greeting card and hold it up to the mouthpiece, and you can make your red box call that way. And a lot of the rainbow people you would use those greeting card thing, and what they would do is they would basically attach a little recording device on their phones, and then they would run it through a little speaker. They didn't get their friend out there. They'd call a payphone up, provided you can still call payphones. There's still places you can do that, amazingly enough. And they'd call a payphone. They'd ask their participating partner to dump in a quarter, and they'd dump in a couple quarters. They would go beep, 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 you know, and it'd record that onto the greeting card. And now you have your little greeting card red box with you, and it's very tiny, very small. You can put it in your wallet. It's like almost the size of a credit card. And you got yourself a chinger.
Well, what is it when the customer-owned phone is different
from that? They use different electronics. They use different process of collecting money. Since you don't have to communicate all the way to the central office to collect money, the money collection mechanism is right there in the phone itself rather than the central office taking and collecting the money.
And the Cocots I've played with, you don't have a microphone until the other side picks up the phone.
Right. You don't even have a voice.
The microphone is not in use, not available to you, so you can't send the tone down.
Right.
That was their cheap fix.
And they all mostly have, you know, microprocessor-controlled intelligence in these phones, which makes it, you know, so it's pretty hard to, you know, hard to do that. Sometimes on some of the phones, you just wait for a while. It'll just return you back to dial tone. And when a dial tone is detected, then what happens is it switches off the dial tone from the phone company, and it issues you a dial tone from the payphone itself. So when you pick up that payphone and get a dial tone, that dial tone is not coming from the central office. It's coming directly from that payphone. So you're not even connected to the central office at that point. It won't connect you until it takes care of all the billing.
The phone line is still on hook.
Right.
You know, the phone is toying with you at that point. Once you've told it what you want and you've paid for it, it will then process the call and complete it.
Yeah, and some of these pro phones can be programmed to accept incoming calls only if you put in 25 cents to receive the call. So the phone would ring, you pick up the phone, it'll say, please deposit 25 cents. You deposit your 25 cents, you can then talk to the person that you call.
Or they call you.
Yeah. So anyway. Any other questions? Yeah.
A question for either of you. A question for you and a question for you, actually,
okay.
I'm sitting here. Sorry. Whenever I'm trying to do research of the time of about 70s, early 80s, trying to find any hacker magazines, you always end up with the Twin Towers of TAP and then moving into 2600 from that point on. Do you recall, since you would probably know anything else like that?
There was something called TEL, based on the West Coast.
Right, out of L.A.
Mm-hmm. And I got a letter into that at one time, under one of my false names. And in fact, because, well, Osbert Kilgallen is the assistant of Ben Caxton in the Robert Heinlein novel Strange from a Strange Land. That was the name I had used in that letter. When I first wrote an article for TAP, it was about Telex, and I looked over Tom Edison's shoulder as he was pasting it up, and on the page opposite me was an article about Marisat, how to hack the voice circuits. I'm going, oh no, I'm hacking the Telex circuits, and I've used Osbert Kilgallen over the air to a ship at sea, so they know that name. I need another name, quick. Chemistry class, that name I thought of that was so cute, Cheshire Catalyst. Yes, and that's the name I've been using ever since.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Tell is the one that you...
Tell, yeah, you'd have to advertise to see who's got it or put up on it.
I'm just wondering, just trying to even get a name, mm-hmm. It's very hard to do. Because
I met the guy who put on Tell at one point a long time ago. He had unfortunately got into a car accident or something, from what I understand, which caused him, and also undue pressure from the telco security, mm-hmm. had to close the magazine down. But I met him at MLA at one point for a very brief period of time, and he kind of gave me the whole spiel about how he started it. And from what I understand, when he did start it, there was a lot of infighting going on. It seems like the L.A. phone freak area has always had a lot of infighting, all these different factions fighting with each other and all that. And it was like, as I remember, like in the early or late 70s, they had the L.A. phone freak wars going on, mm-hmm. different factions fighting with each other and snitching on each other and all that. And this was during the time when I was like, I had written Easy Rider, the word processor program for the Apple and IBM, and I was living in Hawaii at the time, and I'd be getting calls from people from all these different places who were telling me about the phone freak wars. I was just sitting back and just watching it all happen and just keeping really low key and not doing anything at all with the phone.
We on the East Coast, we were shared the knowledge kind of folks, and, just sit around the table on a Friday night eating pizza after putting TAP together and what have you, and just having a good time.
Right. The question I had for you, I don't know. One of the more popular files on my site, or a popular file, is the transcription of An Apple for the Captain from, I think it's InfoWorld, supposedly written by Stephen Wozniak about you.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen it? It describes your work with when they were doing, I guess, a prototype phone card.
Oh, the phone card at Apple, right.
The Charlie board?
Talk about that. Yeah, the Charlie board.
The Charlie board.
Let me kind of explain to you my relationship with the Woz. I'm on daily contact with the Woz, practically, although not too much recently, only because my server has been working great, and Woz hasn't been doing really stupid things like changing my IP address on me. One time he put his network over to DHCP, and that really screwed me up. And I'll tell you, Woz is like a kid, and I can talk to him as if, like, you know what I mean? I'm really, really, really close with this guy. And I call him up and I just shoot him out like 6 days on Sunday. And anyway, he's cool. But the thing about Woz is he's like a kid, okay? He's very, very into his son and his kids, and spends a lot of time at the Santa Fe Unified School District teaching fourth grade. You want to know about the Woz, just go up to Woz.org and go to the Woz cam, and you can see him at his desk there working away, or you can see him in his classroom if he's in his classroom.
And by the way, that's woz.org.
Right, exactly. And you can even email him, steve@woz.org, and he'll probably reply back to you. He spends at least 10 to 15 hours a day reading his email. So he replies, and he's really cool. And let me tell you about the Woz cam. There was one time when my server was down, and I couldn't figure out whether or not it was really responding to HTTP requests or not. And so I said, how can I look at my server? The Woz cam. So I knew which Woz cam to use. So sure enough, he has this little, you walk into this big house up on Blackberry Hill Road in Los Gatos. And in the back is his office, and over to the side, in this little utility room where all his rack panels and his T1 connections are. He's got about three or four T1s in there. And my server is up on is an IMAX sitting up on top of one of the rack panels facing outward, and you can look in with one of the Woz cams. If we had a situation, I could look at the screen, I could zoom the camera in, I could look at the screen of my server, and I could tell whether or not it was working.
But of course, that's if I couldn't actually access the computer. I used Timbuktu to connect to my computer, and I just attach right to the Macintosh as if I'm running the Macintosh control right there. And I really like the Macintosh as a server, and because I'm using I can make very, very quick DNS table changes. It's so easy. It's just insane. I don't have to go up and do anything. I just make quick changes to the DNS table. I can switch over from one server to the next really easy because I'm the name server. So all I have to do is change a record on one or two of my domains, and bingo, I'm not pointing to this server anymore. I'm pointing to this one over here. And I've got a mirror over there, so none of my clients even know that I'm switching from one server to the next, which is really cool.
Not bad. Last question.
John, I was wondering if you could describe the pirate radio station you had set up
earlier. Oh, yeah, pirate radio station, for sure. We call ourselves San Jose Free Radio. I had a Volkswagen van, and I had a little coffin box full of these. I had two of these, like, little children turntables that are off of 9 volts. I had a very nice, stable 9-volt regulator running from the 12-volt DC to the turntable. And I put a little flywheel on it for stability on the turntables, and did some kind of like modifications of some of the mechanics to keep the rumble down. And I was able to have a pretty good stable DC operated turntable. The mixer was all 12 volts. The transmitter was running off of 12 volts. And I used an old TRW transistor with an output power of about 65 watts. Going into a special antenna design that I have, designed to radiate kind of downward and in certain areas. It's kind of an omnidirectional antenna that had a very nice FM footprint, so I aim it into the Santa Clara Valley. And had one of my friends up there run the station. I went out range checking, so I kept driving and drove from Los Gatos. Going down the hill into Los Gatos, I couldn't hear the signal at all, but as I got further away from the transmitter, I could hear it clearer and clearer. I was driving along, I was digging Santa Clara, going up into Mountain View, Palo Alto, and it was still very strong, all the way up into San Francisco, still very strong. I was up on Mount Umanum at the time, and there was this little road, this ledge that went way off on this little side, down into this little kind of a side of the mountain facing the Santa Clara Valley, and you can't even see the road from any other road. It was a perfect location. We call that Spot 1A. And we had another spot called Spot 6 over in East San Jose, and then we had one over, and then we had Spot 5, and that spot was way over in the left-hand side of the valley. And one time we were up on Spot 6, and one of the DJs mentioned what road we were on. Well, we immediately killed the transmitter, we got out of there, we drove down, we moved all the way over to the other side of the valley, and went back on the air again in about 45 minutes, and nobody even was the wiser. And one time we were like broadcasting, and my friend John was on the mixer at the time, and I was out range checking. And John, my DJ, said, "Don't come up to Spot 6. Don't come up to Spot 6." And then it went off the air. I said, "Oh shoot, they must have gotten busted." So we agreed on a meeting place if anything happened, and we go to the pizza place. And sure enough, what happened was, we were in a little subdivision area, in a little developed area where they're developing new homes, and it was kind of near this home, and the Santa Clara County Sheriff's Department came up there to investigate this van that just parked up there, and then the cop comes up to the car, and John had been smoking pot, and opens up the window, and a pot smoke comes out, the cop kind of coughs, like this, and said, "What you doing?" And John said, "Broadcasting." And so after a while, the cop said, "You wouldn't by any chance be blowing any weed up here, would you?" Mm-hmm. He said, "I can't very well deny it." So the cop said, "Don't you need a license for that?" He said, "Nah, we're running 100 milliwatts." So the cop says, "Well, you better go, because we've been having complaints about people up here." He says, "Okay." And so just when the cop left, he went and did transmission and said, "Don't come up to Spot 6. Mm-hmm. And then there was another instance where we were going to get ready to transmit and go up on the air, so we could get all ready to go. We get our turntables and our records and pile into the van. We go up to Mount Lick Observatory parking lot. And that's one of our favorite spaces. That's spot number two. And while we're up there, if you don't know Mount Luke Observatory, you go through this very long, windy road, up, and you go up, there's one little hill, and you go down into this valley, and then there's a little ranger station just past this point, and you go way up, and the windy, windy road way up at the top. And Lake Observatory is like about 5,000 feet above sea level. Beautiful location. From there, you can hit the Central Valley, you can hit Sacramento, Modesto, Stockton, and Watsonville. And we had a coverage area of pretty much close to 200 miles in just about any direction. We were weak, but we were weak all over. I mean, because we, like I said, 65 watts isn't very much in an omnidirectional signal, and we situated the antenna to get the maximum range of different things. And one time we were broadcasting up there, we had some people down at the ranger station. They were kind of making out in their cars, and we were just kicking it back, listening to the radio station. And they were direct line of sight to us. They had a really powerful spotlight. And so I noticed the lights were flashing. It said FCC. And the guy saw the station wagon come up with government license plates on its way up the Lick Observatory, and we knew it had to be the FCC, because what other government car would ever have any reason to go up the Lick Observatory? We had, you know, we knew right away what it was. So we were watching that car winding up the road, and we were sitting back there just, you know, getting high, smoking dope, just playing the Pink Floyd Uma Zuma album at the time. And John, the DJ, said, well, we got enough time to finish up Uma Guma before they arrive. Yeah, I think we do. And just about the time they went around it, and then you get up on the parking lot, you go way around the back and enter the parking lot from the back. Just as the car made the last bend, we killed the transmitter, we sucked in the antenna in the sunroof, we closed the coffin box, put the cushions on the coffin box, we acted as a seat on the Volkswagen van, and we drove down and we waved at the FCC car as it was coming up. Anyways, we had lots of fun with our pirate station.
So that's what the old farts are up to these days. Thank you very much.